Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. March 14, 2018. Have patience. The separation of creation from the Creator happens because of the difference in intention, not in action. Through the action of receiving, the created being adheres to the Creator who is the one giving, as an infant to the mother. And if the infant had adult reasoning and experience, then he would understand that it is not necessary to interrupt his receiving from the mother, but rather to add to it his own intention to give. It is not enough for the mother to delight only in the infant's receiving from her. It is also necessary to add the child's understanding of the entire depth of her experience and love and his own gratitude for such bestowal. This will then become the level of human, not an animal one, as an unaware infant. In the created being, the sensation of the lack of such an intention is called shame, and it is the reason for making the restriction. Talmud Esser Sefi wrote, "The main thing is to have patience. The whole difficulty in studying Kabbalah lies in that it demands a change in values. That's why people leave. They are not ready and do not agree to this because they lack patience. They do not believe that this study will bring them a real outcome and do not understand what this wisdom is talking about. And here patience is mandatory in order to give the upper light, the force that turns us into a new creation, time to work. Gradually we begin to feel, understand, and judge by new criteria. Then even though from all appearances it may seem that the individual is still the same person, in reality, he becomes completely different. It becomes impossible to judge him by ordinary, earlier measures, values, and laws because he now reasons according to the law of similarity of form with the upper force. In other words, he reasons completely differently from the way he did before. We attain such a substantial change as a result of the work of the upper light on us, by going through a very complex inner revolution. Many years are needed for this to take place because such changes occur within a person gradually, in small portions. And even this is difficult to bear. It is much easier to advance within a group, which a person can hold on to. If, with eyes closed, a person grabs onto a group, then he can move through all difficulties. He closes his eyes to the old values and receives from the group, from the connection with the friends, from the nuclei, vessel, in which 10 becomes as one with new values, new reason and experience, new relations, new units of measure. This is a very delicate, difficult period, about which it is written, 1,000 enter the room, but only one exits into the light. It is necessary to acquire patience, to give the upper light the opportunity to work on you and give you new qualities. Where it is written, "Do anything, just don't leave," it refers specifically to this process. An infant is not ashamed to receive from the mother, there is no shame yet on his level. But Malkut of the world of Ein Sof, infinity, decided that she wants to be the same as the Creator and bestow to him in the same manner. That's why she makes a restriction, a very noble and strict action. On one hand, she stops receiving from the Creator. And on the other hand, she decides that adhesion to the Creator is more important than receiving from him. This decision determined the entire subsequent process creation goes through. For the one who desires adhesion with the Creator, the understanding of adhesion must be more important than the reception of fulfillment, in other words, more important than life. After creation develops, in the fulfillment it receives from the Creator, it discovers that the Creator loves it and wants to give it pleasure. That's why it cannot be fulfilled just by receiving. The love of the Creator obligates it to respond in a similar manner, called reflected light. Of course, this returning light is very weak in comparison with the light of Hochma of the Creator, but it makes the creation similar to the Creator. Rabash, the first renewal until the person rises above his desire to enjoy, acquires a screen in reflected light, in other words, some kind of similarity of form with the Creator. Can he exist in the spiritual world, in the experience of the upper light, or to understand spiritual actions? The entire renewal begins only after the exit from Egypt, from egoistic receiving. That is why it is forbidden for idol worshippers to study the Torah, where forbidden means impossible. A person cannot study the Torah because he does not have any connection to it. Torah is the clothing of the upper light in the desire to the degree in which the desire is ready to receive it, in other words, similarity of form with the light. And then the upper light clothes in the desire, as water fills an appropriate vessel which corresponds to it, possessing a screen and an intention for bestowal. So, we attain the Creator by his actions, by studying his nature. In reality, we attain the Creator in our own selves, revealing in ourselves the forms of bestowal and calling them the Creator, Bore, in other words, come and see, Bore. In this manner we study the Torah, that is, the laws of the upper light's clothing in the corrected desire. All of this begins only after the restriction and acquisition of the screen and reflected light, which is called the exit from Egypt. Without a group, the person has no place where he can formulate his relationship to the Creator. In a group he creates that place, through which he receives from the Creator and through which he gives to the Creator. And then he sees that this is not just a group, but ten sephirot, a soul. Lo lishma means that the work not for the sake of the Creator, but for the Pharaoh, in other words, not for her name, lo lishma. History is coming to a close. All sciences, except Kabbalah, work within a small light that can be obtained in receiving desires without correction. So our entire world exists without the intention for bestowal. But this is a very limited glow, a barely smoldering spark of life that allows desires to exist just waiting until the time of correction. In our time, the light has almost filled all desires. Therefore, science is in crisis, and has reached a dead end. There are no more breakthroughs in science, everything is fading. We only find connections between various phenomena. Humanity is allowed to discover this because it leads to the understanding that our world is closed, round, global, and integral. So we must be connected with each other and with all of nature. Only in this direction does science develop and reveal our common relationship to us. But beyond that, there will be no scientific development. Only technology will develop, not the fundamental sciences. Scientists have been talking about this for many years. We have completely exhausted our desire to enjoy that we can exist in. Now only its perverted forms are possible. In the 19th and early 20th centuries before the Great Depression in America, we used such incentives as money and power to advance for. Then, it ended. Today, we simply earn abstract numbers in accounts, and money also is losing its value. History is coming to a close. In other words, we are becoming aware of the need for correction. However, there will be no more material development due to the light of Hochma entering into this world's desires. As a result, people will experience disappointment, depression, and a global crisis in all areas of human activity. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 28th of February 2018, Shamati, Article 37 and Article for Purim. The largest portal Newsmax published my new article, Trump's Business Skills Could Defuse a Nuclear North Korea. As I have expressed before, Trump is not another politician who comes from the business world. Rather, he is expanding the business world to include politics. Previous US presidents such as Clinton, Bush, and Obama had played with the idea of meeting with North Korea, but mostly hesitated. Likewise, political commentators will tell you that such a meeting requires months of preparation. But Trump, as usual, surprises everyone by making a quick move and saying he's ready to meet, and soon. That being said, let's not be naive. A diplomatic relationship between the White House and Pyongyang has surely been taking shape behind the scenes, and the invitation for a meeting didn't come as a total surprise for the Trump administration. Until a moment ago, the two leaders looked like bullies in a schoolyard, feeding the media by name-calling each other, And now they are setting a date for a possible peace summit. Once again, Trump proves that his politics shouldn't be taken at face value, and media pundits are last to correctly interpret his fast moves. Commentators are looking for the familiar style of diplomacy they have gotten far too used to, a well-mannered, predictable politician who says the right things and tries to be clear to everyone. But Trump is different. He brings to the political arena what he knows best, business. Trump demonstrates a business-like pragmatism, aiming for the results he believes are good for America, while caring a lot less about what spectators understand when he positions himself to make a deal. Like a dedicated entrepreneur, he relates directly to the results he aims to achieve through his actions. This also explains why rapid changes make perfect sense in Trump's White House, albeit being portrayed as a mess by mainstream media. Today's White House works more like a business, which can change more dynamically to meet its goals. When something or someone becomes inefficient, it can be modified or eliminated in a flexible way, which is counter to the political world that everyone is used to. New interdependent reality versus nuclear capabilities. From a global perspective, we are marching toward an interdependent reality with every passing day. Whether we notice it or not, interdependence forces us to lay a new basis for international relations. In this context, I see Trump's politics as helping the world go through a reset stage, shaking away pompous ideologies and politically correct habits that tend to inhibit our thinking and distort reality, so as to restart human relations from a pragmatic give-and-take stance. What motivated Kim Jong-un to offer a meeting to President Trump? The young North Korean dictator surely realizes that the most he can get from using his nuclear weapons is hurting a few enemies on the way to self-destruction. All the while, his people are hungry for bread as their neighbors from the South are well on their way to becoming a technological superpower. In other words, beneath and above the surface, Trump's moves may have helped Kim Jong-un recognize that he can get more from coming to terms with the US than by standing behind his weapons of mass destruction. And if this is what's happening, Trump's uncanny politics could be defusing the atomic regime that threatens the world. Susceptibility to spirituality. Question. Since 1995, Kabbalah has begun its disclosure to the masses. Does this mean that children born after 1995 are at a higher spiritual level than we are, and that they are more susceptible to spirituality? Or are they more egoistic, which makes it more difficult for them to correct themselves? Answer: it does not matter what egoism they bear, whether it is bigger, smaller, or whatever kind it is. However, each forthcoming generation is more susceptible to abstract concepts than its previous one. Lower and lower souls constantly descend into our world. But on the other hand, by working on themselves, they reach even greater peaks. From the Kabbalah lesson in Russian, the 22nd of October 2017. Answers to your questions. Part 220. Question. In recent years my life has become dominated by depression and boring monotony. I no longer feel color in my life nor in the world. Answer. Kabbalah offers everyone the discovery of the upper world. Question. A troll is pursuing me. He publishes terrible fabrications about me on the internet under various names and is destroying my reputation. What should I do to be freed from this pursuer who remains anonymous behind many false names? Answer, I personally don't read anything about myself, neither good nor bad. I am engaged only in disseminating Kabbalah to the world, without feeling anything that people say about me, even though I am sure that anyone who does not understand Kabbalah curses me. New Life number 948. True Social Equality.
Hello and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum Ben Moshe. Hello. Our subject today is identity politics. We all have an identity, sometimes even more than one, and we make sure that the group that we belong to will get everything that it deserves. Be with us. Identity politics, please. Yeah, it's a very interesting phenomenon that's happening in Israel and in the United States, and both countries are kind of similar because both of them consist of different ethnic groups, immigrants that live together. And what happened more or less since the 1970s is that this kind of politics developed regarding the situation in the United States and in Israel, a struggle for rights, for privileges. So here in Israel, we saw it with the Black Panthers and the entire struggle between the Ashkenazians and the Sephardics, the religious and the seculars and so on and so forth. And there's a feeling that they're the privileged, whether it's the Ashkenazians or men and so on, or those that are in the periphery or are a minority that don't have equal rights or equal opportunities. In the United States, we hear a lot about white supremacy, the white man who is the privileged one, and versus him, all the other minorities and women and so on that fight for their rights. Now, these definitions don't always go hand in hand with the reality because there are people that are part of these more dominant groups but aren't privileged. But once you belong to one of these groups, that's it. You're labeled, and of course there are social applications, and this is really something that we'd like to talk about today because it really became a part of our day-to-day life. And so we'd like to understand, what are the applications of this attitude, of this approach? Where is it leading us as a society? It's leading to separation, civil war, different problems, obviously, here. In the United States, it could be even more, because here, still, we're all Jewish. And gradually I see that one way or another, there is a kind of integration between the different parts. In the past, it was really strange. If an Ashkenazian got married to a Sephardic woman, for example, and today, it's very common. It's no longer something special, unique. And on the contrary, if there are families that are a result of the mixture integration of Ashkenazians and Sephardics, then the children, they're more inclined towards the Sephardic circles than the Ashkenazian ones. So I've heard. I don't know. I'm very far from it all. I never stumbled upon this, not personally. But I think that the problem isn't that there are so many parts, and opposite parts in society that are far from each other in manner, mentality, education, place of birth. But the problem is that we're not going through the right, the correct kind of education, that above our entire separation, there's also something that connects us. And this is something that we don't talk about at all and that we don't appreciate. Even though that gradually it's becoming blurry, but still, it still does exist. And unfortunately, the most conspicuous example in this respect are the Ashkenazian and Sephardic ethnic political parties. There it's very conspicuous. And they have to do something about it. There has to be some kind of a bridge between them and connection, and not that each of them keeps to himself and is even afraid to integrate with the other side. These are problems that aren't related to me, to the wisdom of Kabbalah. What's related to the wisdom of Kabbalah is that it speaks about the connection between everyone, that there are no two people that are alike, that's for sure, but also there's no one that's different from the others so that they can't be equal. Eventually, everyone has to become as one man and one heart. All of Israel are friends, and there are no differences. So no one will feel inside that they're different, for better or for worse, as if than some other person. And first and foremost, we have to reach this kind of equality, this kind of feeling among the Israeli nation, and later on, all around the world, because love another as thyself, it's actually about the entire world. So seemingly, this is the purpose of this entire struggle, for every group to be heard, to get their rights, to get what they need, to be able to express themselves. This is what it's for. Incorrect. This is an incorrect attitude. Why? Because it separates between the groups. For every group to receive what it deserves. No such thing. Everyone has to receive equally, on condition that it will bring them to connection. But they're not getting the same. This is reality. But what we're talking about is that we're as if sitting on this faucet, and we can decide in what direction to flow the resources. So it's not that you give everyone separately. But to start with, the attitude should be that we're all together, so that all the borders will crumble and disappear. Why isn't it this way to begin with? And this is what hurts so many people, that there are people that are privileged and people that aren't. Why is it this way to begin with? Why? First of all, because we're egoists. And consciously or unconsciously, we build walls between us, barriers. And don't you think that the way to fight it is by force? I'm talking from the country's point of view, the government's point of view, the offices. We have to create a national plan for it, of how to break down the barriers. There are such plans, how to help weaker populations and so on, but it doesn't cancel the borders between them. It's only in order to advance them a bit in culture, education, affirmative action. Yeah, but it's not good. It's also as if like a kind of charity that you give to different places in the periphery or something. It's not good. And also, really, the people that founded this country, they too, the main thing for them was to inhabit the entire area. And therefore, they sent different people, the Ethiopians there, the Hindus there, the Armenians there, and so on and so forth. Meaning, to begin with, it was done in groups, according to your ethnic group, and so on. And it's not good. And to this day, we see entire neighborhoods of Ethiopians, of Yemenians, of such and such, Russians, and so on. It's a problem. Maybe it'll take more time. Maybe there's nothing you can do right now. These things don't happen that fast. But what I'm saying is that on part of the government, there's a lot to be done here, and not that much is done, and it doesn't really work. The situation today is that people feel that they have no other option but to fight for their rights. Any discriminated group feels that it has to fight for its rights. And you're saying that the more correct approach is what? That all of us have to be equal. All of us. Let's sit together. Let's make a parliament of the United Nations within Israel. How many do we have? Many. According to the number of the countries that they came from, more or less. A bit less, because when they came from Europe, then it doesn't really matter where did they come from and so on. So let's create this kind of parliament, and there we should decide, what are we going to do? How are we going to reach a state where eventually all of us will feel good? That will give more money to... We are doing it, but it's not enough. And the main thing is education. And we're not accomplishing this through education. Yeah, the periphery is given more money and different other places. They want to create different things there. Maybe they do dedicate more time there for children's extracurricular activities, but all of it is done in an unpleasant way. I witnessed different such events several times, and what I felt there was that those that give, they look at everyone from above, and those that receive, they receive from below. So it doesn't really change anything. It doesn't change the gaps. Right. So when you're talking about taking down the barriers, what do you actually see? What kind of process? I see it as a process that nowhere, on any show, radio, television, internet, and so on, there is no separation. There is no discrimination. But everywhere, on the contrary, there is connection. Everywhere there are examples of weddings and different events and different circles where actually everyone's mixed together, integrated, and everywhere. It's not supposed to be done in a way that a teacher tells about it at school, but it should be a part of life. Meaning, you have to have movies about it, and special shows where we talk about connection. We don't talk about the separation and how we're supposed to fight it. No. A person learns from something that is practically happening before his own eyes. He sees it as an example for how he should be. One of the arguments is that identity politics separates and hurts social unity. Sure it does. To this day, we look at political parties through an ethnic perspective. And the heads of the parties, they're really trying to point out the ethnic differences because this keeps them in power. I want to ask about Jews in the United States. For them, it's kind of complicated because their identity kind of confuses them, because many of the Jews, they're really white, which relates them to the privileged part of society. On the other hand, they're one of the most persecuted minorities in history. And then many of the Jews, they feel that they have choice. Am I a part of white America because it makes me feel secure? Or do I identify with minorities? I fight for their rights because I also come from a minority. And I see a lot on the net that Jews say, I'm not white, I'm Jewish. And they want to point that out. So I wanted to ask you, is this the question that they're supposed to be asking themselves? Am I white or am I Jewish? Am I Jewish? This is something that they'll have to ask themselves one way or another, because others will force them to ask this question. This goes without saying. And when Trump's time is over, because now this whole thing is kind of covered up, and someone else will come who's not pro-Israeli or pro-Jewish, then they'll feel it really strongly. Instead of them, I think of this kind of future, that it won't help them that they're white and won't help them that they're rich, but because they look white and because they're rich, the hate of the American people will grow towards them, and they'll pay dearly for all of those years in which Trump's in power. They'll pay dearly for Trump being in power? Yeah. Why? Because today they're as if privileged. Thanks to him? Yeah. There are those that say that since the last elections there's much more anti-Semitism. That's true. That's on part of the people. But it's a response. It just shows us how much the government's showing that the Jews are under their wing. I can say that already now there's lots of anti-Semitism, and I see the videos that Jews make about that they're not white and so on, and the responses are terribly anti-Semitic. And anti-Semitism nowadays in the United States is unprecedented. The American people is a very cruel people. Until not long ago, they still had the KKK and so on. And they have a very Nazi approach. We mustn't forget that the United States was founded, established by Anglo-Saxons and Germans. And there was a question, what will be the spoken language, German or English? Meaning there's a very large part there of German descendants. Really a very high percentage. And therefore, it'll awaken. But actually, where does this confusion about the Jewish identity come from? Why are they so confused? We don't know if we're this or that. The problem, I think, is that the Jews, first of all, they can't get rid of being Jewish. They can fly and live and establish their place of residence in some remote place if they'll find one on earth. But it won't help. Still, it'll be found out, and even the locals will start treating them differently. Because it's felt that Jews are different, even if no one knows that they're Jewish. For some reason, it's felt. A person who never saw a Jew before in his life, suppose from South Korea, but he hates Jews. He looks at someone and says, "You're probably Jewish." Why? Because this is the spiritual gene that exists in each and every Jew, and you can't get rid of it. And this is something that flows through blood. And therefore, there is no solution for it, but for the Jews to do what they have to do. So, if you really had to answer this question, that many Jews ask, many people ask, are Jews white? No, Jews aren't white or black or anything. They're everything. Being a Jew isn't a nationality. And it's not a race. Jews, it's not a race and it's not a nationality. It's a different type of people. I'd say from out of this world, really not from this world, because they have a spiritual gene that they have to attain spirituality and to reveal it to everyone else in the world. Until then, the nations of the world will be in demand towards them. And it won't stop. Now, Jews, they're really sensitive to other minorities. They want to help them. Well, I hear these things. It won't help them. They think that by this they're also included, and that by this they promise themselves a safer future. And they're not. They're not. Even if the entire world is set for life, how much did Jews fight for the Afro-Americans? A lot. really a lot. Who remembers that? Who remembers what the people of Israel or the Jews, well, let's leave the people of Israel aside for the time being, but Jews that worked and did for the benefit of all of mankind in all countries, all throughout history. No one remembers that. No one wants to take that into account. No one. They're only forced to open their pockets, taking away everything that they have, throwing them outside of the country's borders, and that's that. And this is also what will happen in the United States. So the phenomenon that we're talking about in Israel and in the United States is identity politics, that different groups within society have to fight for the rights that they don't have, as opposed to the dominant group that's in power. And this way we have one group that's in power, and around it other small little groups, where each of them is trying to fight for their own rights and to get whatever they can. And so we talked about the United States and about Israel and about the Jews, also in the United States, that don't know if they're a part of white America or a minority. And I'd like to ask about the solution that the wisdom of Kabbalah has to offer. Naturally, there are weaker and stronger groups in society. And you said that the formula that the wisdom of Kabbalah offers in order to bring everyone to a state where they really feel that they're equal is to break the barriers between people. Can you explain this a bit more? What's so special about what the wisdom of Kabbalah has to offer? Today I also saw a video made by the Tel Aviv municipality of different ethnic groups singing together and so on. We understand where we're supposed to go, but we're not really successful in this respect. So what does the wisdom of Kabbalah say? How can we solve this problem? How can we make different people and different groups truly feel as equals? There's nothing in the framework of this world that we can do that can help us bring people closer together. But only the great advantage, the great benefit that we get from the connection, from connecting above all differences. And if the people of Israel will start connecting and appreciating the differences in society, seeing them as an opportunity to overcome them and to connect above them, and then, accordingly, by attaining the special, exalted spiritual reward, then everyone will understand why do we have such rifts and differences in society, and that actually they were made in order for us to attain this exalted special spiritual reward. What is this spiritual reward that you're talking about? An eternal general soul, eternal life, unique life that we get as a result of connecting above all differences. This is actually love another as thyself, Ani Hashem. This has to be the law of connection between all the people in the world, first among the Jews and then among everyone. And therefore, I want to respect all the differences. I want to keep them until I turn them into the very opposite, into the power of connection. And the power of connection upon the differences in connection, that I create a bridge above it, connection, then according to the resistance and the result, I get the reward, the attainment of spirituality, the attainment of the eternal, whole, and perfect life with everyone together, and only with everyone together because we're one soul, and this is what the wisdom of Kabbalah says, and the only way to get there is education. Who has to be educated? Everyone does. What do you mean, who has to be educated? Who doesn't have to be educated in this respect? I don't see anyone, religious, secular, black, white, red, yellow, doesn't matter. I don't see that anyone's in the correct state regarding this rule of love covers for all crimes. Because usually this conversation is about someone else having to change themselves in order for me to feel better. Well, in the meantime, it's politics, but no, that's not the way. Only through the revelation of the wisdom of Kabbalah will we understand what we have to do about it, and then mankind can be happy. And then we'll all change together. Yes, because everyone has to. No one can remain as they are. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.